Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Great powers have choked and tumbled on debt before. Habsburg Spain, pre-revolutionary France, the Ottomans, the British Empire. Now, as President Obama's new budget is unveiled, Washington is in the midst of fevered new concern over debt and deficit. Attack it too soon, and you may kill a recovery. Attack it too late, and who knows, this hour on point, deficit, recovery, debt, and how to thread this needle. You can join the conversation. Are you terrified by the debt we're running up, by talk of freeze and cuts? When do we pay the piper? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org. Special welcome today to our newest listeners on WBFO in Buffalo, New York. We look forward to hearing from you. Let's hear from the president right here in his weekly radio address on Saturday, discussing the importance of reducing deficits.
It is critical that we rein in the budget deficits we've been accumulating for far too long. Deficits that won't just burden our children and grandchildren, but could damage our markets, drive up our interest rates, and jeopardize our recovery right now. There are certain core principles our families and businesses follow when they sit down to do their own budgets. They accept that they can't get everything they want, and they focus on what they really need. They make tough decisions and sacrifice for their kids. They don't spend what they don't have, and they make do with what they've got. It's time their government did the same.
President Obama on Saturday talking tough decisions and sacrifice for the kids. We'll hear in this hour from Robert Reich and Elizabeth Sawhill joining us right now. Two members of Congress in the thick of this issue and debate with us from Toledo, Democratic Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur representing Ohio's 9th District. She ranked first in seniority among women in the House and sits on both the Appropriations Committee and the Budget Committee. Marcy Kaptur, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you very much, Tom. Pleasure to be on your program.
And joining us from Washington, Republican Congressman Trent Franks, representing Arizona's 2nd District since 2003. He sits on the House Armed Services and Judiciary Committees. Trent Franks, a big welcome to you as well.
Well, thank you, Tom. I'm so glad to be with you. I'm especially glad to be on with Marcy Kaptur. I know that we are from different parties, but I hold this lady in the highest possible respect.
Well, that's great. The president, you heard him right there, Congressman Frank, says it's time for tough decisions and sacrifices for the kids. Do you see the president standing up to make those in his budget, in what he's proposing in the last couple of weeks?
Tom, is that question directed to me?
Yes, sir.
Well, in all due respect to the president, one of the probably the greatest challenges Republicans have had have been reconciling his rhetoric with his policy. The reality is that to freeze the discretionary budget, the projections are that might save $15 billion this year, and we're looking at a budget of, they're now saying perhaps as high as $1.6 trillion. And so I just got to say to you, the numbers don't add up. It's a very difficult situation. I recognize that, but this president is enacting policies that are very different from those that he promised he would implement if elected.
Marcy Kaptur, on the other hand, the president from the progressive side is getting criticized for talking about any freezes. Brad DeLong talks about Barack, Herbert, Hoover, Obama, saying, you know, rein in spending now and you set back the recovery effort.
Well, you know, this president assumed office in a vortex. Things were going down. The Bush administration had left a huge deficit. Mm-hmm. There was never a balanced budget in those years, and these two wars have extended for a decade now, and there's a huge cost to that. So members like Trent and myself, we have a working relationship. Good spirit is very important inside the Congress now because you have to have a level of trust to deal with the incredible situation we face. For me, there are some basic principles. Number one, we have to look at the difference between money and wealth. Whatever we do, we have to create growth in the economy. So for me, that's A, right at the top. Number two, we have to do what's right inside the banking system, because if we don't get that right, the public sector can't possibly substitute for the capital being destroyed every day inside the banking system. Hmm. I don't believe that's being done. So the ship that we have to sail, as John Podesta said, has to go through a very narrow channel because you can't throw more people out of work. I don't know about Trent's district, but my own, we have one county with 17% unemployment. So direct efforts to help people are a very high priority for me. And I've been a part of a Congress during the decade of the 90s when we balanced the budget and began paying back the long-term debt. It was so great. And we gave President Bush a balanced budget in 2000, and we had paid down the long-term debt to a little over $5.3 trillion, which sounds like a huge amount, but not compared to today. So it can be done, but the choices will be tough.
Congressman Franks, Republicans, yourself are saying President Obama's freeze proposal is not enough. But are you not concerned that if you freeze harder and faster, you throw the economy back in the ditch where he inherited it, and everything gets in worse trouble?
Well, certainly I do, and I want to just say I embrace a very significant amount of what Marcy said, Congresswoman Kaptur. She, I think, is dead on target when she talks about the importance of growing the economy, the productivity, because with all of the myriad vocabulary that economists use to explain the complex workings of the economy, the one thing that should stand out in all of our minds is this word productivity. I believe that the most effective way to enhance or to catalyze that productivity is on the part of government is for us to do all that we can to let those who are producers, those who create productivity and create jobs, small businesses especially, be able to keep more of what they earn and to incentivize every way that we can the process of creating jobs and long-term employment. And so there's a lot that I agree on with Ms. Kaptur, and I do understand that it's a difficult needle to thread. But in the final analysis, this administration has responded to whatever they inherited with just more spending primarily, and that has never been, throughout history, an effective approach.
Well, some would say it helped bring the economy back in the Great Depression. I mean, if you clamp down now, isn't there a risk of the economy going backwards? Are you ready for more spending cuts, but also maybe more taxes to try and get this deficit under control?
You know, that's the strange equation. Marcy mentioned that in the 90s, you know, when they cut taxes, it actually had the effect of increasing the revenue to government, increased the revenue to government about $100 billion a year. We're seeing a tremendous fall off in the revenue to government because primarily, you know, the faltering economy. But when you just dig one hole to fill another, it hardly ever results in a stronger bottom line. And in the final analysis, we're going to have to work our way out of this. We're going to have to try to create jobs. And the best way to create jobs is to put more resources back in the hands of those who are creating them.
Marcy Kaptur, tax cuts is what I hear is the bottom line there. Is that the way to handle this deficit? Will that begin to do it?
I think strategic ones. For example, in the bill that the president proposed last year for first-time home buyer tax credits, I'm telling you that made a difference across the country. In terms of the cash for clunkers, though I didn't care for the fact that most of the money went to Korean companies, and I think we ought to target that more carefully, those cars are flying off the lots. When you carefully target what you're doing, you get a positive response. I would not be for very untargeted, just sort of non-strategic efforts. I think that the Ways and Means Committee has to look really hard at this because you grow your way out of a deficit and this long-term debt. People have to work. We have to create momentum within the economy. And I can tell you, if we don't keep an equal amount of attention on the banking system and what is being done on Wall Street, I don't care what we do in Washington, we're not going to be able to fix this. Because we are destroying capital every day because of the accounting mechanisms that are being employed right now. And it will cancel anything that we've done. So we've got to address that.
Trent Franks, Pete Domenici, who was in the Senate for a long time from your neighboring state, New Mexico, saying recently You've got to put taxes on the table. I'm sorry that some Republicans think otherwise. And talking very, apocalyptically just about what we're facing. He said America has probably the worst economic future that we've ever had. America won't be a power in the world if we let this kind of tsunami debt continue. He's saying you got to have some, yes, growth, but also taxes to help pay this thing down.
Well, I do agree with his diagnosis that America is facing one of the great challenges that we've faced in our history. And certainly I even would want to remind you that I agree with a lot of what Ms. Kaptur just said about tax cuts, that they do have an effect. I mean, she's talking about the cash for clunkers and,
yeah,
and some of these. They certainly had an effect.
Credits for hiring. Yeah,
I believe that that is a demonstration that the market responds to tax policy. The only thing I would suggest as a caveat is that if you look beyond those, after the cash for clunkers or after these targeted tax cuts expire, then sometimes there's the reverse effect where everything falls off sharply. And so I think the argument can be best made for those long-term tax cuts that are able to be put in the calculus of small business to where they know what they're going to be facing in the future and that they have something that they can count on and that stimulates the economy at a very core level. Now, let me say to you, the reason that I voted against the bailout, whether it was in the Bush administration or in the Obama administration, is because I truly believe long term that even though we have some great challenges right in front of us, that if we don't return to a market-driven, free enterprise, growth policy in our economy, that it could put us into sort of a semi-socialist or semi-collectivist economy that will hurt.
Trent Franks, we're out of time right there. We appreciate your being with us, Congressman Franks and Congressman Marcy Kaptur. Thank you so much. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about the monster U.S. deficit and how to deal with it when we're still in the middle of a lousy economy. We heard from a couple of members of Congress right there, now for a couple of big thinkers on these issues. Joining us from Washington, Isabel Sawhill, budget expert, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, author of Creating an Opportunity Society. She served as associate director of the Office of Management and Budget in the 1990s. Isabel Sawhill, thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome, Tom.
And from Berkeley, California, Robert Reich is here, Secretary of Labor under President Bill Clinton, now Professor of Public Policy at the University of California, Berkeley, blogs at robertreich.org, latest book, Super Capitalism. Robert Reich, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
Isabel, first to you. I mean, we've been reading all these dire, dire portrayals of what's going on with the deficit. The debt could be equal to 100% of our GDP by 2020. On the path we're more or less on, set the table for us. You heard the political conversation in the first few minutes of this show. Let's step back for a second and paint the picture of how serious a problem this is and where you see us in the arc of solving or not solving it.
Well, I think the situation is very dire. These are unprecedented deficits that we're facing, not just in the short run, but as you just suggested, over the long run as well. I wouldn't be so concerned if we were just running a big deficit in the middle of a recession. But if you look at the projections, they are equally bad. And so I think the dangers are that we're becoming very dependent on foreigners who are lending us about half the money that we need.
Mm.
Secondly, these deficits mean that the debt is accumulating at a rapid pace, and we have to pay interest on that debt. And in a very large proportion of people's tax dollars are in the future going to go just to pay interest on the debt. We could have an economic crisis if foreigners and other people who are lending us the money get so concerned that they begin to require much higher interest rates, and that could choke off any recovery. And finally, we're handing our children a less prosperous economy than they otherwise would have.
Robert Reich, there's a tenor to some of the concern, including from the Democratic side of the aisle in Washington these days, that I haven't heard in a long time, a sort of crisis concern about a debt and deficit. At the same time, as many people say, don't stop spending now or you will sink this economy again. How do you look at what's going on, Bob?
Well, over the long term, you know, 5, 6, 10 years from now, Tom, there is a budget deficit crisis. There's no question about it. But in the short term, we have a jobs crisis, an economic crisis in terms of an economy that is not working. And as you said at the start of the program, the real question is timing. That is, if the president were to try to cut the deficit too fast, we could find ourselves very, very quickly back in an even worse recession than we have right now. This is what Franklin D. Roosevelt tried to do on the eve of 1937. And although spending had been up and the recession, actually the depression in those days, was actually easing, when he pulled in a tighter on the budget, because, of course, the debt was huge at that time,
yep,
he tipped the economy back into a deep depression. The Japanese timing was off. Their timing was off in 1994. They tried to move toward a balanced budget, and they tipped themselves back into a deep recession in 1994. So you don't want to move toward deficit reduction too fast, particularly when, as now, the private sector is not doing very much. I mean, the private sector is not hiring very much. The private sector isn't investing very much. Consumers are pulling in their horns. Now, Bell Sahil is exactly right. On the other hand, if you wait too long to get this deficit under control, you could reach a tipping point where your interest rates have to go up and the dollar drops and foreigners don't want to lend us much money any longer and you're in the soup. You face potentially very high inflation. So exactly what's the landing pattern? What is what's the glide path? That's the question that the administration has got to answer, and it's extremely difficult to balance this. I mean, to balance those two factors, let alone balancing the budget.
Is tapping the brakes, as perhaps you could describe President Obama with this little 8% of the overall budget he wants to freeze for 3 years? Is that too much cutting back? Is that Barack Hoover, Obama at work in your view, Bob Reich?
Well, as you say, it's just a little bit of a tap on the brakes. There's also going to be $100 billion of added stimulus in this particular budget. So it's not much of a tap on the brakes. I mean, it's a tap for symbolic purposes. But I think the budget overall is in the right shape. You want to keep a stimulus going. In fact, if anything, that should be a slightly larger stimulus right now, in order to get people back to work.
Isabel Sahil, is anybody in Washington being fully frank with the American people about where we stand on this debt and deficit business and what it will ultimately take to get back into a safe zone?
Well, I think the problem is that most elected officials know that talking about what has to be done to deal with these deficits is hugely unpopular. Basically, there's only three solutions to the problem. One is economic growth and recovery, which we should focus on. The second is cutting spending, and the third is raising taxes. And the last two of those three are both extraordinarily unpopular. Republicans don't want to talk about raising taxes at all, and Democrats are very leery of cutting Social Security and Medicare, which are responsible for a lot of the growth in deficits over the next few decades, Medicare in particular.
So, I don't even hear a serious, audible conversation about those kind of cuts. I don't think many Americans have a tangible feeling, Bob Reich, for what it may take to do this, which seems like a political problem, just waiting.
Well, I think that certainly, in terms of the big entitlement programs, Tom, Medicare and Social Security, something has to be done, and some very, you know, whether it's a commission or whether it's a group of of Democrats and Republicans getting together and deciding that certain cuts in the increase, in the rate of increase, have got to be implemented. This, I think, there's very, very broad consensus about this. Americans don't like to think about cutting Medicare or cutting the rate of increase in Medicare and Social Security, but I think they will have to do that if the baby boomers are going to be able to have really enough, and certainly their children will have enough to live on with regard to these huge entitlement programs. But I want to get back, if I may,
yeah,
Tom, to the immediate problem, because mm-hmm. I think that right now Main Street is hurting. Consumers are not spending. In fact, Americans increased their spending in December. You would expect that that would be a big spending month, but that was at the slowest pace since September. And Americans are doing what families need to do. They're increasing their savings. Well, that's fine. But as American consumers pull back and as they increase their savings, that means that a lot of businesses are, you know, they're not going to reorder. They're drawing down their inventories. And in the very strange, odd way we calculate our gross domestic product, it looks like there was a great increase in overall GDP in December. But actually, the only thing that can really be said about the economy right now is that things are getting worse more slowly. And people are hurting. I mean, there's no, you know, your listeners, nobody needs to be told this. I mean, everybody
nope.
knows somebody
yep.
who's lost a job.
Mm-hmm.
So right now would be the absolute worst time for the government to reduce the deficit, because when the private sector is not spending and consumers are not spending, the government is the spender of last resort. The only thing that is, you know, if we did not have a stimulus right now, unemployment would probably be about 11, 12, possibly 13%. So right now is the worst time to actually cut the deficit. Is it next year? I'm not sure. I don't know many people who think that 2011 is going to be all that much better
yeah.
Than right now. Is it 2012? Well, probably yes. I would say if I were, you know, on that trying to get a glide path and that was realistic, trying to land this plane, I would say I'd aim for deficit reduction by 2012, 2013. But one doesn't know. I mean, it could be that we're still in a deep depression, recession, in which the private sector is deleveraging, coming out from under a lot of debt load, and consumers are still scared to spend, in which case the government may continue to have to go deep into deficit. One final point, Tom. In 1945, at the end of coming to the end of the Second World War,
mm-hmm.
If you looked at the ratio, now this is very, very important, because it's, you looked at the ratio of the debt to the total national economy that year, it was about 120%. That was huge. We'd never seen anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
This year, the debt is about 55% or 53% of the total national economy. According to the new budget the president just unveiled, it will be on this glide path maybe 77% of the total national economy by the year 2020. That's not good, but we're not nearly in the same soup we were in at the end of the Second World War, and we got out of that problem because the economy grew.
Isabel Sawhill, Robert Reich says not yet, not next year, maybe not 2012, maybe not until 2013, who knows when. Is this going to be the United States' choice to make, or may we be just cut off by foreign financiers who say, we're not sure about you guys?
Well, I think we should have taken action sooner when the sun was shining, and because it is would be a mistake to reduce the deficit in the middle of a recession. But I think this is a little bit of a false choice. We should front-load any stimulus spending and back-load the deficit reduction, as Bob has just explained. Back-loading, to me, doesn't mean not exercising that restraint now, in the sense that we need to enact measures that will reassure financial markets and all of those that are lending us this money that we know how to get our fiscal house in order. That if we don't do that, we do run a risk that the recovery itself will be undermined by an increase in interest rates or other turmoil in financial markets. And we could have a crisis that makes the current recession look minor by comparison, and we can't afford to let that happen. So we need to stimulate now. Government should be the spender of last resort. I agree with that. But we should also enact measures sooner rather than later that trigger on later when the economy is in better shape. But the people know is coming.
Let's take a call right here. Jack in North Haven, Connecticut. Jack, you're on the air.
A couple of comments. Number one, after the end of World War II, there was an incredible building boom with the soldiers all coming home. Construction banks were making loans, and, of course, that was a fueled a great economy. The other thing is the president wants to assume additional spending. Let me just backtrack. My initial response is when to stop spending now, immediately. If the country's bleeding to death, the solution is not to open the wound more. It's to stitch it closed, end the bleeding. Now, the president wants to assume for the government to take over a previously banking function of student loans, another government takeover of banking. That money should be done locally, local choice, and not by the government giving money by zip code, with your daddy's political inclinations might be a bribe.
But stop spending now, you say, Jack, and let us pick that up. I mean, it's a powerful impulse, and thanks for your call. Bob Reich, you heard the president in his Saturday radio address say essentially that. He said households can't keep on spending. We've got to act like a household. We've got to rein in here. Jack's entirely for that, but I've heard you saying if you stop spending now, you throw the economy back down in the ditch. So where do we go? Is Obama telling the country the right thing here? Is he giving us the full picture?
No, the analogy of the federal budget being like a household budget is just not true, and it leads the public to a false conclusion. The national budget is not at all like a household budget. In fact, it's just the opposite. It's precisely because households are pulling back rationally. They should save more. They can't spend as much as they used to spend. That the federal government has got to step in to the breach, because the federal government is the only spender around that can make up for the lack of consumer spending. And if unless the federal government does that, then we're not going to have employment. We're not going to see the economy start again. That's, I think, at the heart of the dilemma. Many people, like Jack, understandably analogize to a family budget. The president used that analogy on Saturday in his radio address, but it is utterly false.
Isabel, so what's the analogy that the country, in your view, should have in mind here when we think about this?
Well, I think that one way to think about it is that we don't want to have spending increases that are going to become permanent and that aren't going to improve the economy, either the long-term growth prospects of the economy or its ability to recover. And on the recovery front, I think we do need some targeted spending for unemployment insurance, for assistance to state and local governments, tax credits for small businesses to encourage them to hire and invest. So I think those would be good short-term measures, much like a household might need some help temporarily to get on its feet. And then once it's on its feet, it is an issue of whether or not we should continue to have deficits. We shouldn't.
But, Bob, the president couldn't even get the Senate to put together a commission to look at this. He had to do it himself with an executive order because Republicans don't want any kind of tax increases to get on the table. Democrats appear not to want any spending cuts, I guess, even down the road on the table. That doesn't look like a very good political will profile.
No, politics is completely in gridlock in Washington right now, and that's a huge problem for the country. But with regard to the deficit itself, the president doesn't necessarily need a commission. If he were willing to do this, and I here agree entirely with Bell, he could put on the table some real cuts that will go into effect when certain triggers are met. For example, let's say there will be, the president says, a 20% cut in the forecast for Social Security over the next X, let's say, 10 years, but that will not go into effect until unemployment goes down to 6.5%. Or there will be a similar cut in Medicare, in the projected Medicare increases. But that won't go into effect until unemployment goes down to 6.5%.
But so, put some markers out there.
You could put some markers in there, but the most important thing, Tom, is that the triggers would be...
Hold the thought, Bob Reich, Isabel Sawhill. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about the monster U.S. deficit and how to deal with it when we're still in a lousy, lousy economy. Robert Reich is with us, former Secretary of Labor under President Bill Clinton, author of Super Capitalism. Isabel Sawhill joins us from the Brookings Institution. She was Associate Director of the Office of Management and Budget in the 1990s. Isabel Sawhill, Bob Reich says, well, okay, let's set some triggers. Let's at least put some markers out there so that agree that in 2012 or 2013 we'll do X, Y, and Z. Is that good enough for you?
Absolutely. I think that's exactly the right way to go. And what he's also saying, which no elected official is saying, is that we need to slow the growth in Social Security and Medicare. Those are such a large proportion of the budget now, and they are responsible for so much of the growth of spending, that if we don't do that, we're not going to get out of the woods. I would add, and I suspect he might agree, that we need to raise revenues down the road, and I prefer to do that in the form of a value-added tax. All advanced countries now have value-added taxes.
Like a sales tax, kind of.
It's like a sales tax, mm-hmm. and it encourages people to save rather than consume, which is something I think we need in this country. And it is very simple and relatively easy to administer, and it would raise some of the revenues we need for various things that I do think are useful, such as investments in education, in research, in infrastructure, that are going to enable us to grow more rapidly down the road.
But, Bob Reich, do you think that the Congress is prepared politically to even set markers further out that would say we're going to cut Social Security, we're going to cut Medicare, we're going to increase revenues? Could you do even that if you put it down the road instead of now?
Yes, Congress has been willing to do that. Remember in the 1980s, Alan Greenspan headed up a commission that said, in effect, we're going to cut Social Security, the increases in Social Security, we're going to make people wait slightly longer until they're a little older to collect Social Security, but it will all be in the future. And Congress accepted those changes from the Greenspan commission. Congress doesn't think much about the long-term future, and the long-term for Washington usually is beyond the election cycle. So, yes, I think they would, and I think it is probably useful, Tom, for the president in terms of allaying the fears of some of the public, and certainly financial markets and maybe foreign investors, to say right now and propose right now some triggers in the future. Again, I would use unemployment because I think that's what gets a lot of people most upset in terms of the potential. You know, that's mm-hmm. that's what drives the economy is employment. I'd say when unemployment reaches a certain low level, much lower than it is today, we'll do X. When it gets even lower than that, we'll do Y. And X and Y could be some very, very substantial cuts in the increase, projected increases in entitlement programs and certain other things. As to Bill Sawhill's idea about a value-added tax, I certainly don't want to express any objection to taxes down the road, but at a time when over 23% of total national income is going to the top 1% of income earners, I would rather have a tax on the top rather than essentially a sales tax that could hurt low-income people.
Isabel Sawhill, how about it? The European member nations have an average tax rate of something like 38.8% of GDP. Americans adds up state, local, federal to 26.9. Are we headed to higher income taxes?
Well, I think we may be headed towards higher income taxes unless we begin to think about something like a VAT. The other thing we should do is eliminate many of the preferences in the current tax code. There are lots of deductions and other loopholes that should be scaled back. And if we did that, that would be good both for the efficiency of the economy and its ability to grow. And it would probably be fairer, and it would raise some revenue. The administration has a proposal in their budget. It was in there last year as well and went nowhere in the Congress, but it's a good proposal. It limits the number of deductions that can be taken by high-income households. But if I could go back, Tom, to your question about commissions and to Bob's allusion to the Greenspan Commission, which did do a good job in 1983 in setting Social Security on a good path, we need a commission now. And we almost had one in the Congress that was proposed by Senators Gregg and Conrad. It was going to be bipartisan. It would have had real teeth in it. And it got 53 votes last week. But interestingly enough, some of the original co-sponsors, including the leader, McConnell, in the Senate.
The Republican Mitch McConnell.
The leader of the Republican Party, Mitch McConnell, they switched their votes at the last minute. And they appear to have switched them because suddenly the president was in favor of such a commission. And they decided that for tactical reasons, they were going to vote against it. I think that was a real shame that we were not able to get a commission even established to take on these issues.
I want to get to our callers. I've been keeping them waiting way too long. That doesn't sound like an eagerness for action right there. Eric in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Eric, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. Yeah, with all due respect, I find this whole discussion kind of bizarre. I mean, we've got unprecedented unemployment. It's over 10%. It's the worst recession since World War II. The last thing we need to be worrying about is the deficit at this point. It's kind of like talking about your water bill when the house is on fire. We shouldn't be having spending freezes. I mean, there are firefighters and policemen being laid off all across the country because we don't have enough government spending. And, you know, demanding a commission now to cut the deficits just seems like a very strange set of conversations to be having.
Eric, I know what you mean when so many people are unemployed. On the other hand, you know, we're a big country. Maybe we have to talk and walk and chew gum at the same time. I mean, maybe we've got to have some long-term indication that we're going to confront this, even as we go at the unemployment problem now.
In a lot of states, people are being laid off from government. I mean, so this kind of emphasis is doing real damage.
Isabel Sawhill, how about it?
I don't think either one of us is arguing that we should reduce deficits right now. I think we both emphasized that during a recession, we should not be cutting spending or raising taxes. We should be helping to drive down the unemployment rate. I mentioned earlier the need to help state and local governments, so there will be more teachers and firefighters and others kept on the job. I mentioned the need to extend unemployment insurance and to help small businesses get back on their feet. So no one is talking about reducing deficits right now. What we're worried about is the tendency to simply ignore the fact that we have a tsunami of red ink in our future. And that does pose grave risks to our economy. And I think it also is a symptom of our political gridlock. And that's one reason the public has lost confidence in their government is because they don't see their elected officials doing anything about the problem. They just see our elected officials saying, what, me worry? We'll worry about that someday, but not now.
Bob Reich, I mean, you've been very clear on that front, but the window's getting kind of narrow here, isn't it? Getting kind of tight. I mean, you said 70% of GDP debt by 2020. The Congressional Budget Office is putting out a scenario where it's 100% of GDP in 2020. If you set triggers out in 2013, and at some point, our window of opportunity gets so skinny, it doesn't look like there's time, once we presumably get out of this recession, to set things right well.
Well, the window of opportunity is closing, certainly, Tom, but if we don't spend enough right now, and this goes back to the caller just now, Eric's point. If we don't spend enough right now, this recession, depression, could go on for years, and that budget deficit will get larger and larger. The way to actually close it in the future, or at least one way to close it in the future, is to get people back to work as soon as possible and get the economy growing again. So Eric is absolutely right. In the short term, if you ask me what's more most important, stimulating the economy more, or getting the deficit down, or at least making a credible commitment to get the deficit down, I'd say we should do both. We should increase the current stimulus. I don't think it's nearly big enough. And there are many teachers being laid off, and firefighters, and of course, a huge number of people around the country as well. We need to do both. Increase the stimulus right now so that people can get back to work, so the economy can grow, so that the long-term deficit will be even smaller. And at the same time, and this is what Bill and I are talking about, make a credible commitment with triggers so that as the economy recovers, certain kinds of deficit reduction, whether it's spending cuts or what combination of spending cuts and tax increases we're talking about, will leave to a commission perhaps or someone else, and that's of course the political question. But the overall goal has got to be, as the economy recovers, as unemployment drops, we've got to make a credible commitment to getting that long-term deficit down. And, you know, it is possible to walk and chew gum at the same time. We have to do it.
Let's go to Iowa City. Troy, you're on the air.
I got a few questions here. Right now, our debt is outrageous. It's like $50,000 per person. So my thought is you should start cutting the budget by 5%. And that would give money into the future because you're no longer borrowing it today.
But what if that drives us into a depression, Troy? What if that kills the economy so we've got no revenues and it grows faster?
What happens if the United States government just wins the lottery? You know, what if? We're talking now. Right now we are in debt. You're sinking. You don't have a pinhole in your ship. You have a 30-inch diameter hole in your ship, and you are sinking fast, and your water pumps are gone.
Troy, let me take that to Isabel Sawhill. That is a message that is being voiced loudly by any number of Republicans in Washington. Both you and Bob Reich are saying, no, if you just start cutting now, we're going to be in deeper trouble. But the political impulse to cut or talk that kind of cut is very strong, and Troy's got it right there, Isabel.
Well, I think Troy is right that the debt that we're accumulating is outrageous, but I think it's also important to recognize that one way to cut the deficits and the debt is to get the economy stronger. We've talked a lot about the debt-GDP ratio, the fact that debt may be anywhere between 77% and 100% of our GDP, or the size of our economy, by 2020. But let's talk about the fact that if you look at what's happened over the last decade, we've had a tremendous swing of $2 trillion in the size of the deficit. We had surpluses in 2000, and now we have these enormous deficits. The New York Times did a very interesting analysis of what caused this swing from surpluses to deficits, and over a third of it was because of the effects of the business cycle, in other words, the recession we're in now plus several earlier ones, in terms of reducing revenues and exploding spending for temporary assistance. So it will help to bring down the debt if we can get the economy back on its feet. That is one of the solutions, not the only one, but at least one.
We talk as though this is all in our hands. This is an American decision to make. But is there a precipice here or a cliff, Isabel, when foreign lenders, to the extent that they're underwriting, and it's pretty large, say, you know what, we're not sure you're going to turn this around. You're on your own.
Well, I think that's a genuine worry. I think it's one of the scariest things, in my view, about the amount of debt we're accumulating. Even the French are now talking about possibly moving away from the dollar as the sort of global medium of exchange. And we've seen the examples of countries like Iceland and Ireland and Greece who are all having problems. And pretty soon, the bond rating companies like Standard & Poor's mm-hmm. and Moody's may start talking more about the need to reduce their ratings on treasuries. And if they did that, we could have a crisis. So this is a real concern, and we can both grow the economy in the short run and begin to take steps to reduce the deficit and the debt over the longer run. It is possible to walk and chew gum at the same time.
Bob Reich, what's the risk in that, though, of ending up like Iceland or Argentina here?
Oh, I think it's a very small risk.
Even now?
Look, if we kept this up, if we paid absolutely no heed, even as our economy came out of recession, depression, to our deficit, yes, it's possible. Years from now, the dollar could be replaced as a reserve currency by something else. Hard to tell what else it would be. And it may be that foreigners decide that they don't want to lend us any more money. But right now, the dollar is a great bet. It's a secure bet. The interest we pay foreigners right now is extremely low. A lot of people want to buy dollars around the world because there are not many other alternatives. The world is still, by and large, still in a recession. And that's why it's so important that right now people understand that we have two very, very large challenges, and they are absolutely diametrically opposed depending upon what time period you're talking about. The short-term challenge is to stimulate the economy enough to get jobs back and to get the economy moving again. And that's why callers like Troy in Iowa City need to understand, and really the analogy of a family is wrong, need to understand that the government is the only spender of last resort here, when business and when individuals are not spending. Over the longer term, whether it's 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, however long it takes us to get out of this morass, we've got to turn our attention to deficit reduction in a big way. And it is possible right now to make a credible commitment to do that.
Bob Reich, Isabel Sawhill, very grateful to both of you for being with us this hour. That longer term doesn't look so long suddenly anymore. But we appreciate your time and perspective today. Bob Reich in Berkeley, Isabel Sawhill in Washington. Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.